I would like to discuss with you the Icelandic collapse. I don't know how much you know about the collapse. What does it mean, this economic collapse? Do you really understand the depth of it? How profound it was? And all the shock waves that have gone through the Icelandic society, it's only about 6.5 years ago. I came to Iceland in the year 2000, after 19 years abroad. So I lived the experience. I had the experience of going from boom to down, to doom. I can tell you the atmosphere in Iceland was, we are fantastic, we are prosperous, we are best in the world. And we in reality aimed for to become financial center of an international scale. But this dream was too good to become true. Because in reality, we went from boom to doom. And this happened in 2 weeks period, if we say the collapse. It began certainly in early 2008, but it collapsed in October in 2 weeks. All three major banks of Iceland collapsed. Over 90% of the Icelandic bank system collapsed. And people were shocked. We did not really believe what was happening. We could not even at that time really understand what it meant in reality. I have taken up some pictures, collage pictures, that I aim to illustrate the mood. This is exceptional in the Icelandic context. We are rather peaceful people. We argue about everything. We quarrel about everything. But to go on the streets and protest is not the usual thing Icelandic people do. It's really hard. It's cold outside. It's never really conducive to go out. But this, you see the parliament building, you see the one of the big companies, the flag of one of the bankani. One guy went up to the top of the roof of the parliament. This was an insult to our parliament. You see all the people that gathered in front of the parliament. They put fire, they took, for example, the Christmas tree, cut it down into pieces to have firewood for the night. And there was a lot of drumming. And you see attack on the police, and then this thing that has continued to be the discussion, shall we or shall we not be part of the European Union? Imagine Icelandic gross domestic product, the banks, had in 2003 174% of the gross domestic product at the end of the year 2003. Exactly before the crisis or collapse, 1,000%. It was tenfold the gross domestic product. Tenfold. And this was just without any control at all. Just it seemed nobody really was taking or giving sufficient attention to what was happening. What I try with this, just to give you the mood, what was happening. And we can ask ourselves, and that's our role for this afternoon, to reflect on how will this, or how did it affect the health of the Icelandic population? I have here, I'm going to discuss child health. So one, as Mary France told you, I'm a pediatrician. That's one issue, but also I would like to say It's a crucial period in every people's life, those first years. Important for later adult health and well-being. So I think it's important for us to reflect on how did it affect our health. So the first thing is just to give you some examples on the situation in Iceland. You see, this is on third quarter 2008, it's set at 100, but it was a fell down or fall in gross national domestic product of 10%. Iceland is the blue line, and you see it is going rapidly down the drain compared to USA, compared to OECD, UK, and the main trade partners of Iceland, and the euro. You see, euro never came so the eurozone, but it is really a little bit lagging. And you see, Iceland is rather ups and down. So we can say, huge crisis. And remember, the Icelandic krona had no value at the end of October, this here in Montreal. Why? We have the smallest currency in the world. And it got depreciation, it was depreciated rapidly. So instead of 80 crowns per euro in Iceland, it became 160 to 180 crowns when I was here in Montreal. So we are talking about huge depreciation of the smallest currency in the world. And that means also the gross domestic product fell down. This is important when you discuss how much of the gross domestic product we use for health services. It was profound and deep. We can agree on that. This illustrates the credit boom and the craziness of the system that was going on. This is taken from the book Bringing Down a Bank System, Lessons from Iceland, published last year. And it shows that credit to private sector in Iceland. The private sector was taking loans as crazy. 6 times, up to 270% of the gross domestic product. And this is without the control of the state. Those are private. And what was the answer to warning signals? There are assets behind those loans. These are loans taken in foreign banks with assets that are behind these loans. But you can see, and we know now, that was false. What about unemployment rate? I don't know if this impresses you, but the reality for Iceland and unemployment is not a big deal. It's usually 1 to 2%. It basically, everyone can get work, more or less, generally. This meant, you can see here from the Central Bank of Iceland, or where they have from surveys and Directorate of Labor, where they show, you can see in general, it's a very low unemployment. And then we have about 8% here with some tops, the surveys and Directorate of Labor. So here you have, it's 8%, but in some areas, it was 12 to 14%. Huge problem, but nota bene. Many Icelandic people moved away, emigrated, which is not counted. Many people go occasionally, sporadically abroad, come back, go abroad again. But those are the real figures from our official statistics. Unemployment high. Also, inequality was rising before the boom. Here you see all disposable incomes, earnings, all income included, and disposable earnings, exclusive capital gains. That is, here we can see how capital gains were contributing to high wealth of some people. And here It's 43, the Gini coefficient, and I guess you all know what it means. It is exceptionally high. And the increase is so rapid, it has never been seen so rapid increase in Gini coefficient, to my knowledge. So something was really bad and something going on, and people were not really paying attention. But you can see here, it's getting a little bit improvement, but we have to understand also the financial or the capital gains or income on capital gains is less today than it was before, as you can understand. So inequality was rapidly increasing, and you see how tax burden was unequally shared by the population. This is the top 1% in Iceland. In 92 to 2011, you can see it was here in the last decade of the 20th century, it's about 30%, and then it was around 15%, and it increased in the aftermath of the collapse to about 30 plus 35%. So this is because of a policy. You're taking that policy, they should, those who have the most should also pay the most. So we can ask ourselves, what can we do? On top of the collapse, we had two volcanic eruptions. We thought the collapse was enough. 18 months later, we had Eyjafjallajökull. Can you imagine? In April 2010. And then 1 year later, another volcano eruption. Those are dangerous volcanoes, I tell you. And people, like you see here, in darkness, with ash all over. And we people are trying to gather their chaos. And we can ask ourselves, how are we going to react? What are we going to do? What are the options a government can take for a population? Remember, Iceland is a small country. 103,000 square kilometers, I don't use that, I guess, but it's 1/4 of Sweden, only 320,000 people. So it's a small population. And we have a government that tried, what can we do? And the government tried to address this in several ways. What I'm going to focus on is basically that affects children. And I'm not going to go into any details, but actually, what we can say is the government, certainly this affected personally professionals. Some services were cut down. Some people lost their jobs, but many had to cut down in salaries from full-time to part-time. No substitutes for those who were on temporary contracts, for example. Maintenance cut, bought purchase of new equipment, not on the table. And there were mergers within organization and between organization. Some of them were some of them were good. Actually, the crisis was a necessary thing to do it. Some of them can be questionable. We had a lot of others. There were cuts in the maternity, paternity leave, etc. But there were also some issues that were protected. There were aspects of the services that were protected. For example, for child health, it was, for example, we had improved surveillance of development and growth of children. We had improved services in the school setting, in my opinion. We had new guidelines. We had new vaccination introduced 2011. So it was not cut down generally. It was with some focus on the welfare of the population. In that day, I mean, Iceland had a new government in May 2009. The former government collapsed, we had a minority government, and then we had a third government in just a few months' time. And the government that took power in 2009 called themselves welfare government. That was the name they gave them themselves. We are going to be a government that adheres to the Nordic welfare model. So that was the guiding light. We can have a long discussion, did they succeed or not? Were they really welfare or whatever? That's open up for another discussion. But they tried, now we are concentrating on child health. We can then ask ourselves, how did it turn out? At least how we can find data. If I ask you, what would you expect in a scenario I tried to describe for you? What would you expect on child health? We would expect some impact. What impact? It's difficult. I'm not asking you to, but I want you to reflect on it. How can we identify factors that are of importance for child health in such a crisis? What I'm going to do with you in this lecture, trying to see what is the outcome or result of the efforts? Remember, it's only 6 years. The child that was born in October 2008 is only 6 years old now. We don't know. And some were, let's look at poverty and material deprivation for children. I don't know this axis, but okay. We can see that the rates of poverty are more higher for the youngest age groups. But it's not significantly more at the end of the period as in 2004. It's just a little bit here. And we can see here 6 and 11, you see the poverty is for these two population group, 6 to 11 and 12 to 17 years old. But material deprivation, which is an other way of looking at the poverty rates, and I know I'm talking to you who know this, but it's really based on information from the European Eurostat organization. They have 9 questions on material deprivation when they are asking families. Those are regular surveys. It's on household debt, on car and telephone, and how they food, etc. Several, 9 questions. And affirmative answers in 3 of cases means that they are supposed to be materially deprived, defined like that. And we can see here, crazy thing here is how it falls in the top of the boom. Can you see that? Everyone was quite happy. But then it's gradually more or less the same. So not much to see in this. But there is one issue, you may have heard it. Child poverty is a sensitive indicator, and Greece is definitely going through a big crisis. And UNICEF report, the recession, child health in recession, a risk country in recession, they said that Iceland was one of the countries with the highest or most rapid increase in poverty rates. You may have heard it. And here you can see it. It's 2008, it's the blue one. Iceland and Greece here, Greece, and I, Greece, the red one, 2008, this is the UNICEF data, the red line. It goes to from 23 to 50 plus percent of child poverty rates, 50, or half of the child population. It was said in Iceland, it was 11%, became 31%. That is 20% increase, percentage points increase. Basically, this gives the wrong information. It's correct, because they anchored the median income at the year 2008, which was the highest in the boom with the strongest Icelandic króna. Do you understand? If we take exactly the same countries and look at the anchor it to 2005 rather than 2008, you can see how Greece really is definitely increasing, but how Iceland is, it's totally different picture that emerges for Iceland. This means depreciation of the currency, the gross domestic products was going down, etc. So they change, it's changed. So when we look at the figures, we need to take care. When we are anchoring, these are data from OECD and data I got from, I took from the Statistics Iceland. And here we can see also the poverty of children by older parents' age. We see that the youngest parents, as is to be expected, are the ones who are the most poor and also most deprived. But look here, 2005, 2006, 2007, it's over 20%. Can you see? It's very high in the boom. And it's just less, but increasing again, because household debts are one of the biggest issues young people, even those who don't have access to, own their own houses. So there are, we basically see there are not significant changes, and you can see here material deprivation. You can see here material deprivation. Iceland in Europe is in the 7th place. Not too bad. It's actually, we need to take that. It's after the crisis, it's not too bad. You see here. And this is the volcano Eyjafjallajökull, taken just about the eruption began by the farmer. It's a world famous picture. This was doom. I tell you, I was driving around there, and it's crazy to drive in a landscape like this with such a, it's ash all over the place. And many months later, we felt the ash in Reykjavik. Let's think about, okay, begin with mothers, pregnant mothers. I personally claim maternity care is important. I hope you share that opinion with me. And we had revised guidelines in the beginning of 2008 which recommended less number of prenatal visits for pregnant women. And you can see that impact. But basically, women are attending services even more than guidelines. You see here from about, can you see how? And then everything, we are obeying people, and then we go, okay, we change the guidelines, and it goes like that. I can claim the services are high quality. There is nothing in these data for primipara or multipara that gives me indication that something is going wrong. Okay? You agree with me on that? Fertility rate. Fertility rate is also a very sensitive indicator. Birth. Do I want to have children? We can see, actually, it was Iceland got over the 5,000 limit of births, 5,000 children born in 2009, the year after the collapse. And we have a fertility rate 2.22, and it has been like that, but can you see here, it's 1.93. That is historically low. I don't know where this will take us. Is this a signal that people are waiting, delaying to have per children? It's possible. We don't know yet. I claim infant mortality rates are very sensitive, or is a sensitive indicator for development of any nation. Why? It's a complex indicator because it combines so many things. Maternity care is one of them, social situation, lot of things. Also, tertiary care. To very efficient, good care to delivering mothers, good midwifery, and good post-birth care. And here you see, Iceland is just going down. We are the lowest, we are still in the lowest rank, 2.4 per thousand. Basically, it means we are saving every child that can be saved. So, no news from mortality rates on this issue, neonatal mortality. I can tell you, we have, this is the mortality of children. Because after 1 year, they usually, fortunately, it's very low mortality rates. Then we can ask ourselves, this is an interesting work that was done by colleagues at the university. They took 2 years, and 2008 and 2009, and divided into quartiles, and tried to see if there was any impact on perinatal health. They were looking, for example, low birth weight, and that's the only factor that is significant, that low birth weight was in month of April to June. That is the only period, 2009, that means 6 to 9 months after the collapse, then low birth weight children were significantly higher in that quartile. Interesting, but it disappeared. And the same was for just small for gestational age. I can tell you, on the small for gestational age, that is showing, I've been looking at data the last 6 years on small for gestational age. This is for 2 years, 2008 to 2009. I take a small for gestational age and I've been looking at it the last 6 years. And that's very striking that before the crisis, 6 years, 2003 to 2008, on average, it was about 2% of all births were small for gestational age, diagnosed by pediatricians, or mostly pediatricians, but also some other doctors. Clinical diagnosis. After 2008, that is 6 years, 2009 to 2014, 3.4% of the children are born small for gestational age. You know what that means. It is interesting. I don't know what it really will result in, but we are looking closer at this. So I can say this is one of the research that I would like to scrutinize further. And now people are doing some, putting it into growth charts, trying to make more exact definition of the length of the pregnancy. Here we have home visitations. We can discuss, are home visitations important to newborns? We usually have universal health services to newborns, and we address it to all, or we give them all visitation. Maybe we can make it more targeted, we could make it better for several issues, but we can see after the crisis collapse, this probably means that people are not going as often. It seems to me that people refrain from doing it. It's against national guidelines. So this is one impact. Here you can see midwife visits. So it's no change. That means midwife visit after birth. Okay. I hope we share the opinion that breastfeeding is important. I think breastfeeding rates are extremely sensitive to a lot of issues. And it's very important for the mother and for the child and for the family as a whole to have a successful breastfeeding, where the mother is satisfied with what she is doing and the child is getting the breast milk. At the time, for the duration the mother and mother feels she would like to do it. Nothing is happening, any breastfeeding rates. Can you see? Those are taken data from our electronic record, and this is, nothing is happening. 1 week is very high, 6 weeks, 3 months, 6 months, 10 months, 12 months, even longer. All is good on breastfeeding front, basically. What about curative visits? We would expect children to get sick. And here we can see, they go to health centers, nota bene, which was a governmental policy, no user charges for children up to 18 years old, no user charges. And that policy did not change. Health centers, you can see, more or less the same. Pediatricians, nota bene, they are private specialists who charge user fees, but are remunerated, also complemented by the state. And then we have private GP, which is usually night shift, night hours. There is nothing really happening here. Remember, it does not cost for children to go to the doctor if a child gets sick. Okay, here is maternity, paternity leave. And Iceland, we are not so generous, to tell the truth. We are 9 months. 3 months for the mother, 3 months for the father, 3 months for shared disposable for both mother and father. Initially, we had no limit on income. So you got the income you had while you took the paternity leave, then it was 80%, and then it's gradually has been going down. And one of the policy measures that was certainly mistaken, in my opinion, by the government, was to reduce the benefit levels. So fathers have an increasing number not taking their legal share. That means that's not good for the child. It's not good for the family. But you see, it's from about 80% here, 2007-2008, to 71-2014, but this is not correct completely, because as you understand, you can take this 3 years after the child is born, so actually I have only complete data from 2011. People are still, children, they still have the opportunity to take out. So this probably, the 71 will probably go up a little bit. But definitely, this has changed. This has changed. Preschools, I think that's also part of the context of the children. It just continues high participation rate. The only thing that changes is the 9 hours. That extra hour people, parents may have, they have the option to pay extra. And that price was raised in response to the crisis. Also, it was not used so much, so that means that this is a little bit of impact. Then we can ask ourselves, how about the school? And remember, these are all children in Iceland, basically, we are talking about. They go in compulsory school. We see at least, these are data actually from Reykjavik, because now we have children, now we have records for all the country, but this is for this time period we are looking at here, we have only for Reykjavik. And that's 2/3 of the population. You can see children were actually around the crisis, a little bit higher. Pressing, mood disorder, pain in stomach aches, etc. But we see this has gradually been going down. As you can see, per child. If you take diagnosis in primary healthcare, then I've looked at 10 diagnoses, 12 diagnoses that have social gradient included, that are known by evidence that have social gradient. And I look here from 2005 to 2013, and I cannot see any impact. Nothing has changed. Maybe I need to dig deeper. We can discuss that afterward. Methylphenidate. Do you know what drug that is? It's Ritalin. It's Ritalin or Concerta. It's for attention deficit and hyperactivity disorder, ADHD. And this has been one of the issues that has been hotly debated in Iceland. Are we really on the right track on this, in this respect? We should give more psychological support, more training to parents, etc. But nevertheless, you cannot get methylphenidate for children except after a consultation with a pediatrician. And assuming that they are doing their work, or a psychiatrist, but children, we are talking about them. And I assume they are doing excellent work. Even interdisciplinary evaluation teams doing this work come to the conclusion children need methylphenidate. Can you see the group of 10 to 14 years old? It's rapidly increasing, and these here two groups. No cut, just continue. I may claim, I think this is improvement. We can discuss it. It's good to have children on Ritalin or Concerta. I think yes, for some, at least for majority, but this is open for debate. But at least this is hugely expensive. You cannot, this is a very expensive drug. And despite the crisis, children continue. Alcohol and tobacco. Here you have drunk the last 30 days. We have annual surveys on this. Nothing is happening except improvement for drunkenness last 30 days. Smoking daily, only improvement. No crisis. And here is hashish and marijuana also, to give you some example, it's also not changed a lot. Actually, these indicators are only improving. For one reason or another, open for discussion. And then, time spent with the parents. Here is a question. 14 to 15 year old adolescents who reported the parents monitor with whom they spend the evenings. And you see, this is just increasing. Parents are more alert about the children, at least according to the adolescents themselves. We can discuss what it means. You see, the girls are more monitored than the boys. I think that's not only in Iceland, I guess that's also in Canada. But I would call this positive. And can you see? Adolescents, they report more happiness. Here in the year 2000, no, it's 85 and it's 90 here, 98, 99. But I can tell you, this was just put online now, published, during para this week. Published now in Journal of Happiness Studies, the significant research for boys, for girls, for both sexes. And the indicator, and what seems to explain best, or issue that explains, is important explaining this development, is time spent with parents. Can you imagine? Children who report they spend time with the parent, they report significantly more happiness. Isn't it fantastic? You will be surprised how important it is, actually. And to sum it up, Iceland is among the happiest people in the world. Can you believe it? 2000, the last report, this is the World Happiness Report, 2015, it was reported now in April. And report 2013, I think Iceland was in the 9th place. So we are improving. Here is Canada, 5th place. And here are, and this is the Sustainable Development Solution Network that is publishing this. And they use this. They use GDP per capita, social support, healthy life expectancy, freedom to make life choices, generosity, and they use several indicators. And then there is a lot of residuals here that we share with all the others. But anyway, I cannot deny this is the result. And we are happy, despite 6 years after. 6 years after the collapse. So I would like to draw just a few conclusions. I hope you understand this was a historic collapse. Icelandic banks collapsed in its totality. It's the third largest bankruptcy of banks in the US history that is in the world. Three banks on a small island in the North Atlantic in a population of 300,000 people. Global as well as local scale, it's unseen. The unemployment rates are high, very high. For us, improving, now only 4 to 5%. We have felt a little bit of poverty, and I think I would like to say, at least when I look at policies towards children, it was redistributive policy approach. The taxes and redistribution and attempt. At least you want to protect families and children. I think that is important, that you really want to do it. You may not succeed, which is a different issue. I cannot see any major long-term impact, I say but. I am a little bit worried about the small for gestation age. I'm a little bit worried about, like I say here, mental health issues. We don't know. The inequality is an issue, which I think we really need to think about. And then we have an uncertain future, and I will not forget to tell you that currently, as I speak, the healthcare in Iceland is going through deep crisis. Why? People are protesting against their salaries. There are strikes all over. And there is the largest general strike probably going on in Iceland in the end of May. But currently, there are key health professionals who are striking. So we are approaching uncertain areas, new terrain. We don't know yet what happens, but what I'm telling you, this is what I see now. And I want to end with merci beaucoup. I think we share all the wish that our young people are well prepared in school and well taken care of at home and succeed in school to be still more happy adults later on. Thank you very much.